Before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to let you know about a powerful free resource for Lent. It's a devotional excerpt from Lent and Easter for Everyone by N.T. Wright, featuring daily scripture reflections for a week to guide you from the wilderness to the wonder of Easter. Whether you observe Lent every year or you're just exploring it for the first time, this short devotional will help you slow down and grow in wisdom this season. Download your free copy today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now on to the show.
Hi, it's Gavin.
I'm Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow, and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research, and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are good news people in a bad news world.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
Last year, I was invited onto a wonderful C.S. Lewis podcast called Lesser Known Lewis with Jordan Duncan and Sean Stevenson Douglas. We were discussing Christian apologetics, and they have very kindly given us permission to republish our conversation here.
Yeah, well, Sean, let's get into the final bit here, the Christian reflections bit. You know, what in this essay was actually helpful for your faith? Ruth, do you have an answer to that question?
Sure. I mean, the whole thing was just
sure,
so helpful.
Yeah.
And I sort of made myself read it over and over because I was like, there's so much in this. And I feel like every time I read it, something else sticks out. But yeah. I think the whole kernel of the point of the essay around being a translator, mm-hmm. learning the language of the audience. And he's got this one line which really stuck in my head. You have to find out by experience. You have to find out by experience. And he talks about what the reason he's so good at translating is because he learned it from talking at RAF camps. And I think that's really telling. You've got this Northern Irish Oxford professor who spends most of his time with academics, but he learned to speak in the vernacular, in the vulgar tongue, by speaking to RAF soldiers before he then went on to do the BBC broadcasts. You know, obviously a lot of what he was talking about with the RAF soldiers became the BBC broadcasts. And it reminded me of that really powerful verse in 1 Chronicles 12, I think it is, that talks of the men of Issachar who understood the times and knew what Israel should do. Mm-hmm. And I think as someone who spends a lot of time working with young people, I think often we don't take time to listen to what they're saying, to understand their culture. And I'm not saying, like, of course we can't understand everything that young people are doing because it's a minefield. But what we can do is say to the young people that we've got a good relationship with, can you show me what are some of the big things in your culture? What are some of the things your young people, your friends are talking about? And how can we speak into that situation? That was part of our thing around TikTok. It's like, I'm nearly 40. I know nothing about TikTok. I haven't got a clue what's cool. But you know, I probably still use the word trendy, but like, actually our job as Christians is to take the timeless truths and to translate it into the vernacular. So if that means me having to talk about Taylor Swift and what, like, I will do that because that's the language that our young people are talking about. And so I think it's really powerful thinking about how we do that and making sure that we're not just I don't know, I think apologists generally are really guilty of answering questions that no one is actually asking. Yes. And I think, what are the questions that our young people are asking? Because there are some perennial questions, but a lot of them have shifted, or the way they're articulated has shifted. And we've got to start answering the questions that are actually being asked. And we only find that out by experience. So I think that was a really challenging thing for me. And then also, I think what we've already talked about, that mixture of the intellect and the emotion. I think so often as apologists, we find ourselves veering towards only the intellectual. And I think the emotional side of it is so important. And that's what I love about Lewis, that actually in his fiction, he really appeals to the emotion. And in a lot of his apologetic work, he appeals to the head, I suppose. But just that kind of the challenge to really think about how we communicate our message. Yes, the message never changes, but actually the method should change. And it should change whether you're in this location or speaking to these people or speaking to these people. We should, you know, St. Paul said, I've become all things to all people. And that incredible sermon in Acts 17, where he's at the Areopagus and he's just come out of the temple and he's using scripture to speak to people. And then he appears in this kind of secular marketplace of ideas and he quotes their own poetry back at them. And I just think that's a beautiful depiction. I feel like Lewis would do the same, taking what's big in the culture and pointing to Jesus through it. So that was just a really good reminder for me of how am I communicating? Am I just spewing out the things, you know, the same sermon I've been doing 25 years in a row? Or am I actually thinking, what is it these guys are desperate to know? Where is the hopelessness? Where's the questions and meeting their needs where they're at, rather than just giving them my sort of ready-made pat answers?
Slay queen. I hope I'm using that correctly.
I'll take it.
I'm just trying to communicate in the vulgar vernacular. Here. Gen Z vulgar. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say probably a minority of people listening to this podcast, Jordan, would be Gen Alpha slang using people. But you know what? That's just an assumption. I don't want to type our listeners, but how about you, Jordan?
Wow. Yeah, Ruth, that was just so excellent. You're like speaking my language when you talk about all those things and the use of reason and imagination and trying to bring our theology into the vernacular and listening to our audience and learning their language, not only the words they say, but how they think and what they value and those kind of things. So I guess this is something, fortunately, it's like I had, you know, four things on my list here and I knew I couldn't get to all of them, but Ruth took the first two. So I'll go to number three, which is Lewis talks about different types of religions. Mm. And he says that, quote, we may divide religions as we do soups, which is just awesome.
Such yeah, a great line.
Yeah. Yeah. into thick and clear. By thick, I mean those which have orgies and ecstasies and mysteries and local attachments. Africa is full of thick religions. By clear, I mean those which are philosophical, ethical, and universalizing. For example, Stoicism, Buddhism, and the ethical church are clear religions. Now, if there is a true religion, it must be both thick and clear. For the true God must have made both the child and the man, both the savage and the citizen, both the head and the belly. And then he goes on to say that Christianity really breaks down the middle wall of the partition. It takes the convert from Central Africa and tells him to obey an enlightened universalist ethic. And it takes the 20th century academic prig like me and tells me to go fasting to a mystery, to drink the blood of the Lord. The savage convert has to be clear. I have to be thick. That is how one knows one has come to the real religion. But I guess just upon reflection, as I read that part, I thought, which way do I lean? And I think at different parts in my life, I have leaned into one camp or into the other. And in some of that, I just think the Lord was teaching me about both sides of my Christian practice and how I live. But it's maybe just a useful question to think, which side of the Christian religion do I lean towards, the thick or the clear part? And perhaps maybe how can you strengthen the other side of your Christian practice?
Yeah, I hear an echo there of what we talked about a little bit earlier of the truth encounters, beauty encounters, power encounters, whatnot, because you can have the chandelier swinging charismatic who really does need to learn some more of the intellectual or contemplative side of their faith, and it will enrich them. It will make them a better Pentecostal. And the same being true for one of my Catholic friends who we did an undergrad in biblical studies together, and so for her, she was well aware of the tradition in the faith and some of the praxis, the way to actually live her faith out, and as she went deeper in Scripture and in her understanding of the Bible, which was not a major part of her growing up. In that particular stream of Christianity, it made her a better Catholic. And so in the same way, I do see exactly like what you're saying, that and what Lewis is saying. And I learned something about soup in it too. Like I would have not divided soups into those categories. So there you go.
I don't know how I feel about a clear soup.
It's not
a clear soup.
No, it doesn't seem attractive in any way.
Oh, I think it's just good. A broth.
Yeah, he did write this in 1945. Maybe clear soup was all he could have. But
post rations.
That's right.
Yeah. I think one of the things that really struck me as well, I don't know whether you guys experienced this, but when Lewis started talking about the fact that effectively the dangers of defending the faith, that he says, I found nothing that's more dangerous to one's faith than the work of an apologist. No doctrine of the faith that seems so spectral, so unreal as the one that I've just successfully defended in a public debate. And that rings so true for me. Like whenever I'm speaking about something, a particular topic, the week leading up to that, it's like I've completely lost my faith. I'm questioning everything. I'm like, oh, I'm such a fraud. Why am I giving a talk on this? I don't even know if it's true. I don't believe it. And just that danger of surrounding yourself and going from Christian apologetics back to Christ himself. I found that really helpful, that I thought, oh, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just because I've got such a weak faith that whenever I'm defending it, it falls apart. But to know that that was true of Lewis as well is incredibly encouraging. And actually just that sense in which you have got to just keep on your knees back to Jesus himself. Like it's not about the arguments, it's about Jesus. And even he's just so practical with it as well. Like he talks about the fact that this is also why we need one another's continual help. Let us pray for each other. Mm-hmm. And even just a week ago, a friend of mine said, Ruth, you're often defending some pretty hardcore stuff against atheists. What, we need to create a WhatsApp group of people that are praying for you in those situations. Cool. So I was just like, that's such a practical thing. And you kind of think if Lewis had WhatsApp, he probably would have a group of people WhatsApping him, praying for him in those situations. And again, just to, like, it was a good kick up the backside for me to be like, right, I do actually need to get on this and have people praying for me when I'm in those situations, defending amazing doctrines, particularly among sort of atheists, where it doesn't go uncontested. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think sometimes we forget that this stuff doesn't go uncontested. And actually, if we're stepping out to do something, there will be there will be a battle.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
If you've ever wrestled with questions like who goes to hell or should Christians believe in evolution, you're not alone. That's why this month, when you support Premier Insight, we'll send you a digital booklet of N.T. Wright's most thought-provoking Q&A columns as our thank you for your gift. Your support keeps content like this podcast going and helps more people grow in wisdom through biblical truth. Give today and get your copy at premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis.
Hi, it's Gavin.
And Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow, and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research, and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Good News People in a bad news world.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Yeah. And the battle being very internal and external. You talk about that imposter syndrome. I know that for myself, as I had different postings in ministry, so to speak, and different levels of church leadership were opened up to me. So, you know, it's like, oh, I remember being a youth leader at a church for the first time, and you're sitting in the decision-making in your local church, and these leaders who seem like they just have it all together, all of a sudden you get in the back room and you go like, oh, they're being developed as we go. This is incredible. And then that happens on a regional level. And then that happens, you know, you've sat down with, one of the articles that, interviews that you did was with Tim Keller not long before he died, mm-hmm. I believe. And I remember reading that article and thinking like, man, that's so amazing. But for him to say, my prayer life is basically only starting now. And so I kind of always expected, as I rose through the ranks, at least of kind of Christian intellectualism or celebrity or church leadership, that we would find a group of people who have reached this level of sanctification and competence in their job that they kind of graduate beyond what you're saying, the need for that WhatsApp prayer group and whatever. And the further I go, the more I realize that is objectively not true. And in fact, as I talk this out, we have had apologists who have demonstrated that, sadly, with their moral failings, that has cast aspersion on all of their writing and all of their ministry, even though they have been maybe more than anyone else in their generation been able to articulate those beauties. You said there will be resistance, and that resistance is both intellectual and it is spiritual and it is emotional. And for, again, all those listeners out there who say, oh man, who am I? Who am I to share my faith? Who am I to defend these doctrines? Who am I to learn these things and have these thoughts? Well, the truth is, who are any of us? We depend daily on that grace of the Lord. So yeah, imposter syndrome is real for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Really briefly, because I was just kind of responding to that, really briefly, I would say I was humbled by Lewis saying, quote, uneducated people are not irrational people. I have found that they will endure and can follow quite a lot of sustained argument if you go slowly. Often, indeed, the novelty of it, for they have seldom met it before, it delights them. It made me think of 2 Timothy 2:2, where Paul says to Timothy, you know, my son, the things that I have entrusted to you in the presence of many witnesses, teach also to faithful people who will teach it to faithful people. And he kind of lists those four generations coming down from himself where he says, Timothy, what I gave to you, give to others who will give to others as well. And we all have these different platforms and microphones, but sometimes I am guilty of bypassing people who seem like they just won't get it. So I say no for them, if that makes sense. And I think that's what Lewis is saying here when he says uneducated people aren't irrational. They can get it. They will get it. So go slow. Take the time to go with them. Because if we are to combine those two ideas of Paul with Timothy, if you take the time to go slow, build a relationship, and make the argument well and in words that are understandable to them, not just your own echo chamber that you are comfortable in and your own medium that you're comfortable in, they will actually go out and entrust that to faithful people as well. They'll go have the conversation. And they are a native speaker of the language that you want to speak. You know, they are going to be better apologists in the things that we find unnatural than we are. And if we can take the time to go through those unformed and uneducated people. Sometimes it's age-based, sometimes it's years in the faith-based, sometimes it is education, and give them what we have so that they can give it to others. I actually think that that's Jesus's pattern. of patience, and that that'll accelerate our faith more than anything else will anyway.
Slay King. I think I'm getting the hang of this. I think I figured it out.
Oh,
you're
no.
so done with the kids, Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Ruth, it's been so great to have you on this conversation. It feels just like a natural part of the back and forth. And I just want to say, first of all, I've learned so much from you just as a podcaster, listening to how you speak and host and ask good questions and that kind of thing. I try and listen as much as I can to your podcasts so that I can become better at what I'm doing. So thank you for that and for just being excellent at what you do. And of course, the content of what you guys provide is so good and such a good resource for us as Christians. And so maybe could you tell our listeners where they can find your shows and anything else you've got going on?
Sure. Oh, thank you. That's very kind, Jordan. I basically am just faking it till I make it. So that's good to know that you're fooled by my faking it. So premierunbelievable.com is our website. And there's a tab on there that says shows. And if you drop down, it's got the NT Wright podcast, the C.S. Lewis podcast, Unbelievable, all the different shows that we do on there. Or we're on social media at Premier Unbelievable on Twitter and Facebook and TikTok, as I mentioned, Instagram. So yeah. That's probably the best place to find out about all those things. And every now and then we do some live webinars. I think we're trying to do a little bit more. We used to do a lot of conferences, but COVID kind of shut that down, as with most things. So we're trying to do a little bit more of live events and things like that as well. But again, most of the details should be on our website. We've actually got a Christmas course that's just launched, which is very exciting. So it's looking at the kind of historicity of the Gospels, the historicity of the birth narratives, you know, how can we be sure that Mary was a virgin, all of that. So it's kind of a combination of lots of different unbelievable shows, and we've picked and chosen the best bits, and it's all woven together. So that's really cool. So that's on our website as well.
Cool. Well, I'll put links to all those things in our show notes. Where are the Daisy Chains playing next?
Oh, that's a great question. Do you know, annoyingly, we often play at sort of private parties. So lots of anniversary parties, birthday parties, weddings, things like that. I'm hoping there might be some sort of Christmas things that we're playing at over the next few months. But yeah, we've got a little Christmas EP that's available on Spotify. So the Daisy Chains, if you look that up, you should find that
out. I certainly will.
When I was looking at some of your socials in preparation for this, I was delighted by the fact that you are in that band and on mission with youth and producing these high-level apologetics conversations. I appreciated that so much. So maybe if you do a Canadian tour, make sure you give Jordan and I an email first.
Do you know what? The first place I ever played, I was in a jazz band at university, and the first place, I'm a total non-adventurous person. I'd really not set foot outside the UK. But the first place I went on tour with my jazz band was Canada. We went to Toronto. We played at Niagara Falls. It was amazing. So got a lot of love for Canada.
Awesome. Well, and we do have a tradition here, Ruth, just to kind of sign off and give us an insight into maybe a little bit of your Lewis psyche. So what is your favorite lesser known work? And so we know, of course, we're not going to go for his the Mere Christianity stuff and the Narnia stuff. We know it's fantastic and we know it's great. What's your favorite lesser known Lewis work?
Oh, that's a good question. I really love the Ransom trilogy, and I think this, I've not heard anyone else for whom this is the favorite, but particularly That Hideous Strength, the third book in the trilogy, I absolutely loved, because it's so, I mean, this makes me sound a bit sort of gothic, but it's so dark and dystopian, and it's almost like a negative apologetic of what life without God can look like, and life where we're idolizing technology and other things, and actually God's not in the center. So I absolutely loved that. But I think I've become obsessed is a weird word, but I find myself talking a lot about suffering. And I don't know whether it's just because I do a lot of work with young people and, you know, the rising mental health crisis and all of that. And I'm always looking for new resources to talk about suffering. And so I must have read The Problem of Pain when I was at university. And it's a great philosophical book, but I certainly would not give it to anyone who's in the throes of suffering, because it's like there's literally no emotion in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
But then I remember coming across A Grief Observed, And I just think that is one of the most incredible books. I don't know that it maybe answers the problem of suffering, but it certainly resonates. It's a bit like some of the Psalms that don't necessarily give you hope at the end. It's just a kind of ranting of, you know, my tears of drenching my pillow. And there's just that amazing line in A Grief Observed when it says, you know, go to God when your need is desperate, when all other help is vain. And what do you find? A door slammed in your face and a sound of bolting and double bolting on the inside. And after that, silence. And like, it's a pretty brutal line, but it's also so heartfelt. Mm-hmm. And it's written by a man deeply in the throes of grief. And I think, yeah, it doesn't necessarily give us answers to the problem of suffering, but it does show us someone who really understands it. And I think that's what a lot of our Christian faith maybe does when we talk about the problem of suffering. It comes back to that Aslan weeping thing, you know, like maybe we don't have a perfect answer to why we're suffering, but we do have a God who weeps, whose tears are bigger and brighter than our own, who's really sorrier about our pain than we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so beautifully depicted in A Grief Observed. So, yeah, I sort of cheated there. Well, that was effectively four books, wasn't it?
You wouldn't be the first guest to answer multiple different works. Yeah, that's absolutely acceptable.
Excellent.
That was a conversation with Jordan Duncan and Sean Stevenson Douglas, which was originally recorded for the Lesser Known Lewis podcast, which they've very kindly given us permission to republish here. Do check out the show notes for how you can find out more about their brilliant show. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Progressive knows there are some surprisingly expensive things in life, like rugs. You know, people say a rug would really bring the room together. And sure, you don't know what that means, but it sounds important. Suddenly you're using words like jute and sisal. Then you see the price and lose it, because how can the thing you walk and spill on cost so much? So you devote your life to taking down big rug. But then you remember that switching your home and auto to Progressive could save you hundreds. So looks like big rug is safe for now. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Hi, it's Gavin.
And Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow, and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research, and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Good News People in a bad news world.